When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed, and this episode is Cues of the Force. The Q stands for questions, and the answers will hopefully materialize like a force spirit appearing before someone in need. I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
I'm Kat Napsok, and like all force spirits, I'd like to sit down now, please. My back hurts.
I would really, really love if there was a force spirit who appeared and was sitting down, but there was nothing visible for them to sit on, right? There was no stone, there was no log. There's just like, nothing. Look, I am appearing to you from an entirely different realm of existence. You're just going to have to imagine my chair.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. That's all I want.
That's all I want. And maybe when that force spirit is sitting down on absolutely nothing that we can perceive, they are listening to a book from Audible. Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. You can get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/forcecenter. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. This week, we are continuing to recommend Shadow of the Sith by Adam Christopher. We're going to be digging deep into that big book. So if you want to be caught up, you can listen by downloading your free audiobook today at audibletrial.com/4Center. One more time, that's audibletrial.com/4Center for your free audiobook. Ken, as we are recording here today, have you completed your journey through Shadow of the Sith?
I have not. It's so funny. I started reading this book so early, I brazenly proclaimed to Joseph off air, I might have enough time to read it twice. I'm hoping to finish it before we record, and I will, but not anything on the book, just life. And it sits there on the coffee table, and you know, you do that thing where you're like, ooh, yeah, I need to read a couple chapters. I'll do that in 3 days, apparently. And so it's good. And this is why I love the audiobooks, and that's an option. And I might start doing that, even though I sometimes struggle with not the audiobooks themselves, but just I get lost in my thoughts. And next, you know, I'm thinking about what I need to target, not the book I'm listening to. But I think I might need to do that to help me, always be engaged with the book, reading and listening.
Oh, yeah. Getting on that treadmill that you got there, right?
Yeah. Might have to.
Yeah, maybe that's what will finally make me really commit to an exercise regimen is listening to audiobooks on a treadmill. No, I feel you. Spoiler, I enjoyed the book, but at this point, I really do have to like set aside 1 or 2 days and just be like, this is what I'm doing today. I'm power reading this book.
There you go.
All right. Well, we look forward to discussing that in more depth soon. But right now, we're going to get to your questions. We got 2 from Twitter, 2 from our patrons on Patreon, and we're going first to Twitter. And we have a question from R2-D2 playing bass. Yes, that's right. Not only is the image of R2-D2 playing the bass the image of this person's Twitter presence, it's their actual name, R2-D2 playing bass. Here's what they have to say. How big are planets in Star Wars? When Luke is told by Obi-Wan to go to Dagobah to find Yoda, he isn't given much information. Could you imagine being told to go to Earth and find Tony? I am happy to suspend disbelief, but just out of curiosity, do you think the planets are tiny? All the best, guys, and thanks for the great work. May the Force be with you. Thank you, R2-D2 playing bass, for the fun question. I feel I could easily find a Tony, but possibly not the right Tony. I could find a Tony pretty quick most places, right?
Yeah. Just shout.
Very, very fun question. I think it feels to me both sincere and also having a sense of humor to it. So, Ken, where do you go with this?
Sincerely have a sense of humor with it. That's where I go. I wrote in all caps, I think about this all the time. This is something that I've thought about all my life, all my time. And like R2-D2 playing bass says, disbelief has been suspended. I got no problem with it, but it's just a big curious question mark that I have here. It reared its head again for me with the Mandalorian, with a lot of him just kind of, I got to go to this planet and I'm kind of right where I need to be. And again, I'm saying this again, I'm okay with it. I just think about it a lot. And then Lego Skywalker Saga, where you have to, you know, you have the option to fly towards the planets and you know, and you see it and you can choose to go to it. But it's just like, wow, this is pretty big. So I think just in terms of that, I think the coordinates is the answer. I tell myself, you know, I got the coordinates and then I move on. And I can buy the Force thing having a little something to do with Dagobah, life readings, anything, or just the idea that R2 is like, oh, I've been here before. I'll get you there. Don't worry about me.
I know where Yoda crashes.
Yeah, I know where he goes. But I would love a deleted scene of Din Djarin just landing all over Tython and just going, damn, not it. Over and over and over and over and over. So to the direct question, I'll wrap up my answer here. We can get to you here. Do I think planets are tiny in Star Wars? No, I don't, which only adds to this problem in my mind. I think they're big old rocks and you got to find the right spot. And it's a miracle. And I don't know all the answers, but I love this question.
Yeah, it's a very fun question. I think for me, the answer is no, the planets are quite large. They are of different sizes, but some of them huge, ginormous, right? I like your point when you're playing the Lego game of like you're at Kamino and like, look at how small Tapoca City is.
Yeah.
It really drives it home. These planets range in size. I think this is one that I don't know. I'm almost like I'm electrified by the challenge of it. That I think for me there are lots of answers that are sometimes either directly offered by the stories or implied by the stories, or you can just fill in the gap. Like, I think for a lot of the planets, it's, you know, the Force guiding the pilot makes a lot of sense to me. I think Luke going to Dagobah is like, yeah, that's, you know, he's being pulled
you know, by instinct to a specific location. For me, like, and I think there's some other, you know, trips like that where you can imagine someone being, you know, directed by the Force. Maybe Rey and Chewie landing on at the right island on Octo. You know, maybe that is a scanning for life forms. Maybe that is, I know Rey is not sensing Luke in particular, but maybe she senses the caretakers, you know?
Right, right.
So there's that. And then I think there's some specific instances of scanning for life forms or technology, right? I mean, that's explicitly why, you know, the Imperials find the technology on Hoth, right? I think Obi-Wan knowing where Topoka City is probably like, I'll scan for technology. Ah, yes, the ginormous hit I'm getting off this city. I think I'll go there. And then other instances where, you know, people have coordinates, you know, like Anakin and Padme going to rescue Obi-Wan on Geonosis, like they're probably reading his coordinates, right? A ton of times people are going to a known location, right? Like Han going to Maz Kanata's is like, yeah, I know where I'm going. You know, so I feel like for a lot of them, it is either scanning life forms, tracking coordinates that you have, or maybe using the Force. So for me, that's where most of the answers are.
Yeah, look, I think that's great stuff that we don't need to see. Like I always say, you know, I don't need in Game of Thrones to see Jon Snow and Davos on a ship for 3 weeks going to Dragonstone. I don't need to see that. I just got to know they get there. So I think maybe that's some of the stuff going on here where Han's like, yeah, we punched it in and the L3 and the Falcon computer gave us the Google Map directions right to the front door here. It's like when I get to a new city for comedy and I type the word donuts on my map and the donut shops pop up. Now I know where to go, even though I've never been in the city. So I think it's something like that, but it's always fun. I love this stuff. I love these kind of questions. It's not something that gets you hung up, but it's definitely those it's the bar and playground conversations we have had our whole life of like, how did he know? How did he land right where he needed to be? And I think when you look, there might always be an answer for you.
Yeah, there's definitely some headcanon. I think the last thing for me, you brought up Mando, and I was thinking about Mando a lot, is, you know, there is this tension between logic versus story flow that I think is going to happen in almost any story. And I know, you know, a lot of viewers really want logical answers. You know, they get distracted if there isn't. But that's always comes at a cost, right? You can have a story where that's the storytelling style, is every little beat, every small detail is a part of the story. Like that's the storytelling style of, say, Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul. That's that's what they want to do. And that's what shapes the way that show moves, right? Mm-hmm. But then you look at something like the Mandalorian, and like, do we want a line of dialogue where Din Djarin says to himself how he found Luke and Grogu on Ossus, as we now know the planet's name is? Yeah. Did we want a bunch of scenes where he lands on different planets, calling in favors, going on mini quests to get directions? Like, is that something like we as an audience, do we want that? Does that fit in the style of this show? Do we want a montage of him landing different? Once he finds out Ossus is the planet, do we want a montage of him landing the wrong place? I think for me, like, I'm kind of having a sense of humor about it. And I know a lot of times people's perspective is like, I want it to logically make sense. And I really get that. But to me, it's about style and it's about the point of storytelling of, if I were going to watch Din figure out how to find Luke and Grogu, I would want to be learning something about Din in the process. And I would want to be asking, is this driving the story forward? Is it creating tension? Is it supporting the themes? If the episode was about Din feeling lost and unconnected and he can't find them, then great. Then we can do it, you know? Mm. So I think for me, I'm really hyper aware of those moments where like, maybe we, the audience, could know more, but what would we lose by getting that information?
Yeah, no, that's a great way to look at it. And I want to also shout out Pelimoto for being one of the only people in Star Wars to pull out a map and say, here's where you need to go.
And also for having a fixed address. It's easy to find Peli. She's going to be at her shop, right?
Well, absolutely. Love it.
Thank you very much, R2-D2 playing bass, for the fun question. I'm going to spend the rest of my day looking for Tony's in Los Angeles, and I think I'm going to have a lot of fun. Any other thoughts before we move on, Ken?
No, we have found the answer rather nicely and smoothly. Just landed on the answer spot.
Excellent. Our next question comes from Brett Burns. Brett says, do you think a Jedi could be presented with a different colored kyber crystal at different points in their life? For example, if a Padawan were presented with a blue crystal during their first gathering and then returned as a veteran master, could a green crystal present itself, assuming the colors aren't random and based on the individual and their relationship with the Force? This is a very fun question. I'll start with the big picture answer of, yeah, absolutely. I think in modern storytelling, the crystals are presented as colorless when chosen. I rewatched a couple minutes of the Gathering episode in season 5 of the Clone Wars. And yeah, when the kids are finding those crystals, they are just beaming, glowing, bright light. And then when they actually merge with the kids, they make their lightsabers. That's when the colors emerge. So, Ken, where do you go with this?
I really dig the thought behind this, this idea that your kyber crystal could reflect your own growth as a person, right? Mm-hmm. And you're right, at the beginning, it's maybe clear. We know the bleeding the blade on the Sith side. We've seen Ahsoka kind of unbleed the blade and then have the clear saber and everything like that. Rey with the yellow. So I love what you're saying too about it. It is, I think, an extension of their relationship with the Force and who they are as an individual. But that just makes me excited about this possible idea that we know the symbolism and the purpose of the gathering. Can we have something called the changing where you go back a little later and you would expect the Padawans would grow and new parts of their life? Now I will say this before I kick it back to you, perhaps there might be a quick counter of, hey, Jedi to be steadfast, true to the tenets of the order. But then I just asked myself that question, then I thought, well, I don't know if the crystals care about that, right? The crystals aren't in the Jedi order. And then what we spent a lot of time with the prequels learning is, I don't know, maybe the Jedi should have changed and grown a little bit there. Maybe the cores need to be the same. Who they are needs to be the same, but how they go about things might need to change. So all saying, give me the changing. I'm good with this idea.
Oh, I love that name. And probably with Jedi philosophy, with the ability to evolve, I would imagine an older Jedi going back to Ilum because they lost their blade or because they feel something changed in themselves, or maybe they even gifted their saber to somebody else because it was the right thing to do, whatever reason. I would imagine it is something healthy and forward moving, like the gathering and then the changing as you're describing it. But I'm kind of fascinated, like, is it also just like, is there any part of it that's a little bit of a walk of shame? Like, you know, Obi-Wan and Anakin get back from the first battle of Geonosis and they're like, these great Jedi, they gotta go back. They lost their blades. I'm like, are you taking the second gathering?
I love that. It makes me think of, like, oddly enough, John C. Reilly's character in Magnolia, where he loses his gun as a police officer, and it's this whole plot point there. So yeah, he needs a changing, needs to get a new blade. Obi-Wan losing an Attack of the Clones has got to go back. Then he's like, kind of like, ah, man, now it's like fuchsia. I was blue before. What do you fight?
I mean, he loses it in Phantom Menace. We have never got the full canonical how he gets his final, great blade in between Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith, to my knowledge, in modern canon. But yeah, he's made a couple trips.
Yeah.
And he's stayed true blue, which I really, really like. I think that makes sense for Obi-Wan Kenobi. I don't remember where it is, but there is a reference to Ahsoka, you know, making a thoughtful, kind of like what you're talking about, the changing, where she decides she wants that other blade to complement. She wants two blades and has to go back, you know?
Mm. Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and we'll have to get more of that there. And and I don't know. In terms of the Jedi needing to change and grow, I say that with caution and trying to be careful of, we don't want the Jedi to... Yeah, Dooku changed quite a bit. That's what I'm suggesting. But I just like the idea. I think that's something Qui-Gon would be like. He would push for it. Like, I think we need to go back. You know, when you graduate, you're not the same graduate high school as the person you are when you're 40. Like, we all maybe need to go back every now and then and see what's there for us.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think one of the other in canon stories that I like that really, I think, reflects what Brett is asking about and talking about is, they do change throughout your life, right? Maybe in subtle ways. I love in Clone Wars Season 7 that Anakin makes those adjustments to Ahsoka's blade and it turns them from green to blue, which obviously caused some canon consternation with the Ahsoka book. But I love that as a storytelling moment that Anakin means well, but he's even in his kindness, he's being controlling. Whatever way he adjusted the lightsabers to make them even better, he somehow imprinted his own personality perspective, you know, on Ahsoka.
It's like going in for a haircut, and that's not what I wanted, but it's what I have. Oh boy!
Give Ahsoka the Anakin. Give her the Anakin.
Yeah.
This opened up to me. We were talking, having some fun with the planets of headcanon for things that are maybe just like that. That's the convenience of storytelling. That's the power of narrative. I almost like this headcanon that even the Skywalker blade. Maybe the Skywalker blade is having different moods at different times, different users, different eras. And that's why it's kind of a different hue of blue at different points in the story.
Ooh, I like that. See? Yeah. We're onto something here. Brett, you're onto something.
I got to do a huge Twitter thread now about what it means when the Skywalker blade is really bright blue, what it means when it chooses to have a pointier tip.
Oh, yeah. There were a couple of years of my life where I'd have an angry, pointy tip on my blade, you know? That's why we change.
Imagine you go all the way back to Ilum, and the only thing that changes is you get a slightly pointier tip.
You wear a t-shirt. I went to Ilum, and all I got was this pointy tip. There you go.
Well, great question. I think the simple answer, Brett, is, in our opinion, yeah, we definitely think the color and the overall everything of the lightsaber could possibly change as Jedi grow and their relationship to the Force grows. Any final thoughts on that one, Ken?
No. And then we've created something that I want to see. So let's get it going there. The changing. So there you go.
I hope that's the whole second season of the Tales of the Jedi shorts of all of the adult Jedi who went back to Ilum one more time. Yeah. With that, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be back with our questions from our patrons on Patreon.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
And we are back to continue attempting to answer cues of the Force. Our next question comes from a patron on Patreon and a Star Wars thinker, podcaster, tweeter, discusser, our friend Alden Diaz. Alden says, "Hey friends, hope all is well in your corner of the galaxy. Let's get heady and weird, shall we? I often find myself pondering the mystical and unexplained elements of the Star Wars mythos. Things like the Bendu, Mortis, the Wellspring of Life, Force Priestesses, Nameless Beasts, and Chosen One, Virgin Births, all that jazz. Since the Dagobah Cave, Star Wars has explored the eldritch, magical, and metaphysical material with so much confidence. So how does that particular aspect resonate with you? Also, I'm curious, which of these creations sticks with you the most? Is there one that you find yourself fixating on or wanting to revisit? Side note, if they do indeed make an Obi-Wan Season 2, I'm hoping for these kinds of layers and concepts." All right, Alden's asking a bunch of great questions within this. I'll start by addressing the final side note. Big agree. I definitely agree on that Obi-Wan hope. If there is a second season, and if that second season is his journey with Qui-Gon to learn to become sentient, retain his sentience as he becomes one with the Force, I'd really love it to go to bizarre and ethereal and metaphorical spaces in that journey. Just like we saw Yoda go to some real physical places, but also go to some of these sort of not quite knowable, not entirely knowable realms of the Force. I would love that. I think that would be some great variety and be really great to bring some of the more weirdness that we've seen in animation and in books and bring that into big live action would be awesome. Ken, what are your thoughts specifically about that? Do you want to see Obi-Wan go on a trippy trip?
I really do. And I really think that's what the part of the story at least would, you know, need, like, to make that work. I mean, if he's going to go train with his Force Ghost mentor, like, you got to imagine it's going to be a little different, right? And the challenge of doing what you're saying, to bring it from animation and books, which it could be just a little bit easier to get that stuff over in people's minds to accept it. And that's even part of what we might be discussing in this entire question here. But I don't want to say it needs to have it, but you know what I mean? Like, it just would make a lot of sense.
It would be really, really cool. And I think it would be, I loved the first season of Obi-Wan, and there's a part of what I loved about it was, oh wow, this just feels like, you know, season 3.5 or, you know, chapter 3.5 of the Skywalker saga. So to see it kind of take that next step and venture into these bizarre realms would be so cool. Let's get into some of Alden's other questions. Ken, for you, how much does the eldritch, the magical, the metaphysical, the weird side of these spaces and creatures, how much does that resonate with you?
Well, first I got to say, come on, Alden. Could you just ask me, like, what my favorite colored Y-Wing is? Like, you got to – red, by the way. I had a controversial take. I like the red ones more than even the classic yellow. No, I do love this stuff. And my appreciation for the what I'm calling, you know, the magical Star Wars moments has absolutely grown on me because – look, I got to be like, I've mentioned this a few times. Like, you guys don't understand how much of a scaredy cat kid I was. Like, my mom just trained me to be afraid of everything. The Dagobah cave kind of scared me a little. Mostly that lizard groaning when he walks in, that whatever that, like, that was freaking me out.
It really is like you're not wanted here, right?
You're not wanted here. And I'm okay. I like lizards and iguanas, snakes, not so much. I totally didn't understand it was a vision until I was about 10. Like, true story, right? I was like, why did Vader meet him there? That was a weird spot. How did Vader get there? Was it was Dagobah a small planet and Vader just found it right away? Me and little Joseph weren't friends yet, so he didn't explain it to me on the playground. So I didn't fully engage with it. And that pushed me towards things I could understand. AT-AT stomping through the snow and rebels fighting back, right? So I just kind of grew up with that. But I love these moments now. It really reminds me of the spiritual nature of Star Wars. I always say one of the reasons I love Rise of Skywalker is it's like going to a Star Wars church. It's very spiritual. And you know, even the scene, the memory scene with Kylo Ben and his father is, I put it in this kind of category of what is real and what is imagined, you know, what is there, what are you seeing, what are you experiencing through Kylo's brain, really? And I'm so moved by it. And I think through these type of scenes, I see it as how important real questions get asked of us through fantastical bursts of fantasy. Mm. And they force me to kind of pull back from the details and pull back from the AT-AT stomping in the snow and see what is there for me. You know, just see what Star Wars is asking me and reminding me, hey, it's fantasy, even more than sci-fi, as I always say. And a lot of people say, I'm not alone in that. And it just forces me to pull back and go, whoa, what is this series? What is this show? What is this movie asking me to ponder?
Yeah, no, I really, really like that approach to it. You have the great phrase, emotional canon, right? Where we can talk about what happened on what date and how do the AT-ATs actually function and or AT-ATs actually function. All that kind of stuff where we can kind of get into the details and all of this ethereal, magical, fantasy, otherworldly stuff really invites us to focus on the emotional canon of, you know, what the Dagobah cave is, you know, how many hit points the Dagobah cave has can only be partially understood. So it invites you to kind of turn off the targeting computer part of your brain and focus on the soul of the scene and focus on what is Luke facing in there and why and how does that affect him? I think that's a really, really great way to look at these kinds of scenes and moments and characters.
Yeah. Yeah, it's all fun to ponder. Like the Bendu is great, but I could totally be like, what was that thing? The world between worlds brings logical questions to my mind. Like, there's a doorway to get to. Where does it exist? Do they have a Starbucks there? I don't know. Force priestesses, are they real? Are they former Jedi? Are they former anything? How much imagine? All fun to ponder, but it really is that big why, not how. And I love it. It forces me to really push my brain to that way, to that
door, yeah.
in that direction.
Yeah. And I think for me, like that, I loved all elements of Star Wars. You know, I wanted a lightsaber. I wanted an X-wing. You know, all these kind of things. I, you know, loved learning the names of the aliens in the cantina as I got older and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. There's so many elements of Star Wars that I love. But I think the thing that made me return to it and made it go deeper than the surface is this stuff. I was trying to think of, Alden throws out a virtual thesaurus of great words for this. And I was trying to think of like, what's the one word that I would describe what this means, these kind of characters and scenes means to me. And I thought of the word transcendent. The dictionary definition of transcendent is beyond or above the range of normal or merely physical human experience. So like the transcendent, the spiritual side, this sense that there is something bigger out there that we're all connected, that my instincts come from somewhere. I've talked a lot about the how kind of early understanding and a deeper appreciation of Star Wars came from artistic things like learning to drum, where it is like I have the technical side. My dad told me what the counts are and he on what beat I should hit what part of the drum set. But he couldn't tell me how to feel the music. I just did that, you know, out of instinct, out of being a human, out of having a transcendent moment, a spiritual moment, you know, and that then also transfers to all sorts of things I've done, from art to comedy. And I know you've had those experiences too, so that there's something that about it that's reassuring, right? That there's just like those things that we sense that we can't entirely put a name to are real and they matter. So it has this kind of deep personal meaning to me in my own life. And then in the story of Star Wars, I like encountering them because I think the Force should be not entirely knowable, right? Yeah. So seeing these transcendent characters and places are a way to physically explore the idea that the Force is not entirely knowable, that it can be encountered and explained and experienced up to a point, but there's always more to be explored. Anything is possible. You can walk into the world between worlds and understand its potential and possibility up to a point. You can put some nouns to it, but you don't entirely know it. In the next temple you come across is going to be something entirely different that you can only partially know. That's so intriguing to me, and it's so exciting, that idea that anything is possible and some things can't totally be known.
Well, you know what? Oddly enough, I think it ties a little bit back to the kyber crystals and this idea of Star Wars reminding you the need for change, the constant need to change, grow, and discover. And your journey is already begun before you even know, but it's also never really over. And if you let go, you could still move forward on the path. And then you have these crazy, wonderful characters or locations that just are like, forget what you thought you knew about this story, this movie, and just these characters in the story. Forget what they know. There's something new for you to discover. I think that's a great way to look at it.
Yeah. Yeah. And you can figure out some amount of logic to some of these, you know, characters and places, but they still have that wonderful spirit of, but there's always more to know. The mystery will never be fully solved, which I love you attaching to the idea of us as humans evolving. We're always discovering. We're always, you know, continuing to build who we are. And I think I find that in Force Priestesses and Nameless Beasts. So Alden also asks, which of these particular transcendent ethereal characters and places resonate with us? Which do you find yourself thinking about and wanting to know more about?
Look, Dagobah is a Hall of Famer, and I don't think we want to overlook that at all. Mm-hmm. And especially we talk about just, for the sequel of perhaps, the biggest movie of all time, and they do a sequel and that's never, more American Graffiti. You can do it wrong. George reminds a lot of people there. You can do these things wrong. Not only is it, hey, the entire success of that movie hinges on the good guys maybe getting their butts kicked for a lot of the movie and losing dark tones, the second act. Oh, by the way, we're going to have a Muppet as the main character, or one of the key characters. But also, you have the Force as presented in New Hope as, it's this mystical thing. It's this voice in your head, and it's a concept. And then you suddenly go to this cave and the darkness, and there's a vision, and this little green Muppet's teaching these weird lessons. That's a big leap. It's a big leap in my mind.
I love what you're saying. You know, you and I have both talked about how, like, the actual novelization of Star Wars says, like, from the adventures of Luke Skywalker, right? Mm-hmm, like, that idea that Luke Skywalker has endless adventures, and you finish watching Star Wars, like, oh, he used the Force and he destroyed the Death Star and he got a medal and he's a hero. And what is his next adventure going to be? He's going to have a real bad dream under a tree.
Yeah.
It is absolutely leaning into the mythic, into this isn't just about power fantasy. This is about growing and changing and learning.
So absolutely. Dagobah's a Hall of Famer, as Alden even pointed out, which will launch it. But I gotta tell you, I've always been just fascinated with the world between worlds. I go back to that a lot. I called it one of my favorite episodes on the old Collider review show at the time. And again, I'm someone who, like, I want to see the Rebel Alliance shooting blasters at walkers. Like, that's going back to the early days, what I love, and even the politics around that. I'm still drawn in by that a lot, but that world between worlds just was this mythical lesson in letting go and know what you can change, knowing what you can't, how the dark side wants to control that. I was reading even some stuff from Henry Gilroy saying, like the Dagobah cave, it is about what you bring into it, and that people might experience different things or see different things, obviously based on their lives and their experiences and what, maybe the dark side could be offering them or what the light side's hoping they choose. So I go back to it a lot. And the added bonus is Ezra's in a biker scout outfit when he goes in there. So I get it all. I get some pew, pew, pew. Biker scouts are one of my favorites. And just some mythical, magical stuff that I couldn't believe. You know, when the big questions of Ahsoka Lives ? T-shirts that Dave was wearing, all that stuff. And then the drawings he was kind of teasing and leaking out. I wouldn't have thought this, right? Mm-hmm. This was not an answer I would have come up with. Thank God. It was something totally different, totally mesmerizing, and something that totally teaches valuable lessons. It's Star Wars in a nutshell, and I don't leave the world between worlds often in my mind. I think about it a lot when I'm talking about Star Wars.
Yeah, I think the world between worlds is just such a great big swing because it does feel very bizarre and very different. But then you dive into that, the emotional story, and if you just look at World Between Worlds, it's a place that you walk into and all of the large events of your own life, the events that are connected to you and you're kind of aware of, but you're maybe not exactly aware that this is a generational memory that affects you. All of your memories are you know, swirling around, and you're pulled by the desire to fix something, and you're pulled towards wanting to know something more about this, and seeing all of these visions, it could be a gift where you learn and you grow, or it could be something that drags you down. Like, when you think about it that way, like, yeah, the World Between Worlds is Tuesday for me, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Just think about all the important moments in my life, and which do I pine to fix, and which do I pine to go back to, and what other visions that aren't mine are really connected to my life and I pine for, and all those things are like, on one hand, it's the weirdest thing in Star Wars. On the other, it's the most natural, normal thing. It's what people do on the bus.
Yeah.
In their own minds, you know?
Mm. World Between Worlds, the public transportation of Star Wars, is what we're saying.
Exactly. So I kind of love it for being those extremes. I also just, I want Star Wars to take those swings. We've had a lot of really great storytelling about people collecting all the ancient artifacts of the mm-hmm. Jedi and the Sith, and kind of implications of what they do. And like, I'd like it to go beyond implications to, like, please show me 18 more weird Jedi temples that do weird things that can be used for good or ill, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we're going to be talking, well, actually, by the time this episode comes out, I can't remember what we're talking about, Shadow of the Sith right now, but there's some chapters where I'm like, this is some high fantasy stuff going on, and I love it. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I also really like the Force Priestesses. There is more that you can kind of track down about them from what they say and from interviews. Yeah. I like the idea of these kind of masks that represent all these emotions. There's the implication that they're one being split into emotions, which mm-hmm. is so fascinating to me, because it is like, well, the battle goes on. Yeah. Even in this being that learned to preserve themselves within the Force, they're still having, you know, the positive, hopeful one still has to deal with being negged by the, you know, negative masks. That's strangely reassuring.
Yes. Yeah, nah, I love the Force Priestesses. I think I really was kind of enthralled by them early on, but just on our Clone Wars rewatch, just how valuable those episodes are to the overall Star Wars story, just our lives, and how Star Wars can inspire you and teach you again and again and again. Those episodes are solid, and I love what they bring.
Yeah. Any other ones that you wanted to speak on?
No, all around a good list. The Bendu is fascinating to me too, because, you know, it first pops up, you're like, oh, I get that reference. I get that. I know where the Bendu comes from and what George wanted to do. And so, hey. But then beyond that, it too is just something of just like, I'm like, how real was the Bendu? He was very real, but was he not? I mean, he takes actions with Thrawn. It's just, it was, again, not something I would expect after that first season. Right. And to get to where we got with that show on a lot of levels, World Between Worlds and Bendu. It's I'm fascinated by that kind of stuff too. And just wonder, I don't know, when, you know, clearly live action is some of it from Dagobah on. I you know, Rise of Skywalker again comes to mind. The Rey's cave experience in The Last Jedi, mm-hmm. her visions. I think even at the end of Rise of Skywalker, we get to experience the voices with her and everything. That's something that might be considered a little out there. We've seen it live action, but I really am waiting for that glass ceiling to be shattered on weirdness in live action. And we'll have, you know, George was like, hey, I was going to try with my versions. You all probably would have hated it, but my 7, 8, 9 was going to be on a micro level, or whatever he said, microbiotic level. So anyways, yeah, I'm wondering. And the Mando is one of the things where I'm like, that could have very well have been in Mando season 2, if, you know, could be through season 3.
Right. Yeah. I mean, George Lucas's Star Wars Episode 8, Meet the Midichlorians, right? Like that, it could have been some wild stuff. Bendu is one of the top reasons that I really want to find time to rewatch Rebels. Obviously, mm-hmm. Tom Baker is very close to my heart, does an amazing job with the voice acting. I want to rewatch the Bendu story a little bit more compressed, but I do just like the general idea that even a cosmic being that claims to be in the middle eventually realizes they need to take action.
Yes.
Get off the fence, Bendu.
Yes. Yes.
And I don't claim to remember all the ins and outs of the Bendu, but I want to revisit that. Final one for me is I'll name check them, the nameless beasts of the High Republic. Their sort of name that is being used on Wikipedia has settled into. We see them and have a couple different names for them. That to me, though, they're a great example of something that I was like, ooh, I'm really curious where they're going with this. They're a great example of the transcendent just telling the emotional story, right? That these are beasts that literally force the Jedi to face absolute fear and nihilism. What if mm-hmm. what if there is no light? What if everything is pointless, right? They're creatures who make the Jedi face their worst fear.
And definitely, you know, because they first kind of technically showed up in Dooku Jedi Lost, right? That was kind of the idea we got going on there.
I think they're referenced.
And I just remember kind of going, I don't know what's going on, but then the use of the High Republic has just been wonderful.
Absolutely central to the storytelling and some great weirdness. Any final thoughts on that question, Ken?
I'm curious. Once we really go for it live action, I can't wait to see the discourse on that one. I really can't. It's a different ball game when you try to say it's quote unquote real what you're watching versus animation. That's not a slight animation. Love Rebels, love stuff. I don't know if you can get away with Mortis, A World Between Worlds, in live action yet. But we'll see.
I think you can, and I think you should. Mortis and World Between Worlds, like they look cool, right? The design is cool. Yeah. I want it to go even weirdo. I want part two of season two of Obi-Wan Kenobi is Ewan McGregor has to climb into the mouth of the Bendu in order to be swallowed by the Force Beast. Like, let's go weird. Yeah,
with Qui-Gon just going, get in there. You got to do this. Get in there.
There's always a bigger Bendu. Yep. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. All right. Thanks, Alden, for taking us some fun places. We are going to go to our final question from Justin Jacobson. Justin says, have any characters other than Thrawn started in the books and appeared in the television shows? Which ones would you expect or like to be next to get their big or small screen debut? This is a great question. Obviously, just for the kind of straightforward who's shown up, Cobb Vanth is one of the big ones, right, in Mandalorian. Yeah. Came from the Aftermath books. We had an Obi-Wan Kenobi, a little kid, Corran Horn, who and his mom, who are very big in the Legends EU continuity. Not books, but Black Chrysanthemum is a comics character. Obviously, Holdo is from The Last Jedi and was always intended to be in The Last Jedi. But if you read Princess Leia of Alderaan, it came up before the movie. So in a way, we saw Holdo in a book before we saw her in a movie. Those are the couple of big ones that jumped to my mind. How about you, Ken?
You mentioned Cobb Vanth. Actually, I can't believe I love Black Chrysanthemum and I kind of forgot. Yeah, but comic book counts there in my mind. Rook was another one, too. Talk about Thrawn. Talk about his assistant with Warwick Davis voicing him in Rebels coming from the Zahn books. You know what's funny? I didn't do research. I didn't go to Wikipedia or Google this. I literally just stood in front of my bookshelf this morning and was like, do I remember any of these names? I popped up. And those are some of the big ones, at least.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's then go on to the second part of Justin's question of characters that you would expect or like from the books to show up in a small screen live action Star Wars.
Yeah, I think it's time for me to renew my the Movement for Live Action Rae Sloan campaign. I've taken my foot off the gas on that over the years. That used to be all I said for a long time on many shows, even other shows that have nothing to do with Star Wars. I just love that character introduced in A New Dawn as a captain and brought back in such a wonderful way in Chuck Wendig's Aftermath series, appeared in comics, video game appearance, of course, in Star Wars Squadrons. Just a key character for that time that we don't know much about yet. Don't know the end. Don't know what happened when she got out to the unknown regions. We know something did, and just something interesting, but she can cross into multiple eras for me during that time frame. Obviously, you could take it back a ways. Interesting story. Someone who is associated with the villains, the bad team, but also has just a big heart and a big some experiences that led her certain ways, but also starts to change, starts to adapt, and doesn't want to serve anyone else. Wants to serve herself, but in a not a selfish way. And from my point of view, just like being true to herself. I think there's a lot to that character. So I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful. Some other ones that popped to mind real quick. Vi Moradi is another one that I would say. Would love to see her go more than just Batu on Galaxy's Edge. That's exciting as well. Going to the comics, I think there's two big ones. One of them is huge, and I even saw some people asking, hey, when is this ever going to happen? And that is Dr. Aphra, and I'll say with her, Saint Astaros, who were wonderful in the series, came from the comics. I definitely think it's time. I'm starting to look across the landscape of potential shows, Joseph, and I just don't know when for any of these characters, which bums me out a little bit, but I think it can still happen. But that's why I think Ray Sloan might be the most likely for me.
Yeah. I mean, I think that there is a definite possibility in the next couple of years that there's going to be need for elbow room to go into the post sequel era. And it would be great to see Vi Moradi in particular show up there, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think for me in the books, this is something that I've answered a lot of time. And I realized when I looked at a lot of these characters, I feel like there's this really rich time kind of in the Mandoverse era, honestly, about characters that we've kind of met who have had traveled through the end of the Galactic Civil War, Ray Sloan. And it is set up to go on this great adventure. She's launched out there with what is the beginnings of what becomes the First Order. So she's not in charge in sequels.
Yeah.
She's got a ready-made adventure. One of the characters that's in the Aftermath books, who I just really love, Singer Wrath Velis. Very, very... wry, rough and tumble, gritty character who was just a sort of a dark imperial enforcer, selfish out for himself, right? But then has a change of heart and ends the books working directly with Mon Mothma. He's a gay man, and so there's lots of interesting things to explore with this character, right? And so to have, you know, I can see him popping up in Mandoverse where, like, okay, we're trying to take back Mandalore and eventually we need to talk to the New Republic. And who is Mothma's representative? Singer, you know, like,
yes,
fascinating. Same thing with Alphabet Squadron, since that whole book series is really dealing with the time after in between Endor and Jakku. And it ends with kind of telling us where these characters go, but almost any of those characters, main character pilots could show up. I'm partial to Wyle Lark. We'll talk about them more obviously in our Shadow of the Sith review, but the acolytes of the beyond, we got a little bit more clarity on who they are, and they'd be fun to pop up in Mandoverse. Shriv is from a video game, but also books. Shriv is just a champ in that era. So there's just so many people in that timeline.
It's fertile ground for sure. Yeah, and I, with Ray Sloan, I was even thinking Ahsoka series. If it goes anywhere out in the unknown regions, and all of a sudden bumps into some. Is that a super Star Destroyer? Yes. Hey, that's Palpatine. Yeah, there's a lot of potential. I'll say that at times I don't hold out hope for it. I don't mean that to be too cynical or negative. It just, when I first was like pounding the drum for Ray Sloan to show up, that was 3, 4, or 5 years ago now. And so many other characters have shown up and everything, but I still think there's so much room at the table for these characters we're talking about here.
Yeah. And I think for me, it really has felt like, what story are we trying to tell? What character do we need? Does that character already exist, or would they logically be there? You know, I think that's how we got Cobb Vanth in Black Chrysanthemum, you know? So I'm hoping for more moments like that where it's organic, where, okay, well, if Ahsoka is going to run into the baby First Order, who's in command? Well, it might be Ray Sloan, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's really great. I got two more thoughts. One is Haas Obit from Catalyst.
Oh, yeah.
He is a Drazilian, like Ori Marco, and he had a large role in the book. really helping the Ursos escape. So I'd be happy to see him pop up again. I remember really liking him. And then for my final thought, Ken, I'm going to choose Chaos.
Ooh.
I would like to see Mara Jade.
Okay, sir.
Yeah. Right. It's throwing a thermal detonator into the discussion space because I don't think that I would want to see the character with the exact backstory that she had in the EU.
Yes, right.
And much has changed around that. So I'd be fascinated to see how they adapted the character. And I think some people would be thrilled to see Mara Jade. And I think some people would be not thrilled to have her story adjusted in any way, shape or form.
Well, that's the key, because it would have to be adjusted, right? And I get it. I wouldn't call myself the world's, you know, I wouldn't call myself a Mara Jade fan at times, but at times I get it. And again, I've always said love with that character represented for so many people, especially young women during that time where you had Leia, Beru, Mothma. You didn't have a lot of choices. And Mara Jade shows up in the 90s and is an inspiration for a lot of folks, So I really do love the character from that point of view, but it would have to be reworked. And that's a fun challenge. There's clearly, you know, that era, there's Adam Christopher had a deep cut reference to Zahn stuff in Shadow of the Sith. There's fans. So someone's either trying, has tried or will try to make someone like Mara Jade happen. Or talent card too.
Oh yeah. Oh, so many. It would be fascinating. Anyway, that's our clickbait for this episode. Should Mara Jade return? I'm fascinated by the character, and in all sincerity, I think she's a really interesting, important character, and be interested to see her. She will always be the character she is in those novels, in those stories, right? And so it'd be fun to see a different take on her as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Any final thoughts?
No, look, you get us talking about this, Justin. There's a lot of answers out there, and I think that's a testament to the wonderful world that sprung up from 2012, but 2014 on, with New Dawn and Rebels and everything. A lot of new characters, a lot of people love to celebrate and want to see make that big jump to live action.
Yeah, exactly. All right, we are going to our final segment, Power of the Light Side. If you are a patron on Patreon, we have put up a post calling for these entries, which are just asking people to share something positive about Star Wars, something that you really enjoy or love, or something that has been meaningful or helpful to you, to counteract some of the negativity that can be out there. We want to shine a light on the light side itself. And this week we have a very thoughtful entry from Adam Knight. Ken, are you ready for this?
I am ready.
Here's what Adam has to say. Given the things happening in my life right now, it's probably not surprising. This is what's on my mind. Sometime in the winter of 1983, my dad surprised me one evening and said, "We're going to go to the movies." Well, I'd certainly watched movies with dad beforehand, usually whatever happened to be playing on one of the five channels available to us over the Winnipeg Airwave rebroadcasts. This was a special thing. We were going out to the theaters, a special trip, just me and my dad to the locally famous Metropolitan Theater in the heart of downtown. Turns out, spoiler alert, it was a double feature of Star Wars and The Empire Strikes Back. Watching on the big screen the adventures, the fun, the fear, and the tragedy of those first two life-changing movies not only left an indelible mark on the way I look at the world, but created a real bond between myself and my dad. It's not an uncommon thing for sons to have trouble connecting with their parents, clearly. My father's upbringing was rougher than mine from a different era, and while he always treated me fairly and with love, I often grew up feeling like he and I were different. That we were interested in different things and didn't have very much in common. Turns out, naturally, that as I gained life experience of my own, that obviously we are very similar. We have shared interests, ideas, perspectives, and are undeniably bonded in ways that go beyond our love of Westerns in space that tell family dramas in a succinct spiritual format. As such, being able to introduce my dad to The Mandalorian while I was recovering from a minor procedure took me back to being almost 7 years old. Watching his eyes light up and his smile broaden as Din Djarin and IG-11 mowed down that town of child rustlers in the most sci-fi realization of a classic Western shootout I've ever seen committed to digital film was simply magical. Seeing him relive his own childhood in that moment, seeing his mind expand and his imagination awaken because of Star Wars rekindled the bond between us that honestly never left, but ebbed and flowed over time, as everything does. That afternoon with him was one of the best times of my life. As I write this, my father is nearing the end of his time with us. No Bacta tank or teched out mod will be able to keep him from passing on into the Force. But through the tears, I am smiling because we are meant to grow beyond the past they lay for us, as my daughter one day will do to me. Obviously, there are many other important things that Dad gave and taught me beyond our oftentimes silly space shows. But being able to revisit something he'd shared with me that meant so much to the both of us, well, it's just another way of knowing that no one's ever really gone. Thank you for reading. If my words today have moved you in any way, please consider a local cancer care charity of your choosing. For example, the good people at the Canadian Cancer Society are doing tremendous work in difficult times to provide help to as many suffering people as possible. May the force be with you. May the force be with you, Adam. Thank you for sharing this very real, very honest, very moving Power of the Light side. Ken, do you have any reactions?
Yeah, I mean, a little watery eyes here. And Adam's a great listener of us here at Four Center. He's also, you know, we share a bond over being involved in the pro wrestling world. He's also a great author as well. You can follow him at Overdrive Author and just say hello to Adam Knight, the author of the book series Overdrive. So I love hearing the raw honesty. And one of the things I love about Adam is he's a big rough and tumble guy, right? He's a pro wrestler. He's a big dude, and in the gym, all those you great pictures. I'll keep the updates, but he's always presented such a soft heart here, and I think a lot of that comes from Star Wars, right? I don't know if Adam would agree or not, but this kind of stuff and fathers who maybe find it, it's a little harder to connect, especially certain generations. I have that too. My father and I are so similar, but you know, we don't talk all the time because that's just not what you do, you know, and to have these kind of things. It's really powerful. And have Star Wars to be at the center of so many of those kind of connections and to see it still moving those connections forward or causing those connections to happen. And I love seeing that kind of stuff. I love seeing, you know, the fine folks of the Father and Son podcast, the Star Wars podcast that's out there right now of two different generations celebrating this. It just shows me this is the other power, the added power of Star Wars. But even down, we talk about the big spiritual stuff, but even down to just the pew, pew, pew of it all and a smile on the father's face. That's powerful stuff. So, Adam, thoughts with you and thoughts with your family, of course. I really appreciate this share.
Yeah, no, this is really powerful on multiple levels. And heart goes out to Adam for going through this part of life that is so difficult, but also just really inspiring to hear the way that Adam is processing it in such, you know, a healthy way and turning to stories and philosophy and community to help through these inevitable but hard parts of life is really, really inspiring. And I think for me, definitely, I think my father is aware that there was a lot of emotional distance with his father. And my dad has gone on such a wonderful journey. He's a very young parent for my brother and I and kind of knew, like, I don't want to be so emotional distant. Mm-hmm. How do I do that? You know, he went on a journey to evolve, not knowing how you did that and not having anybody to tell him or help him, you know?
Yeah.
And so it has been a journey, and the beats along the journey were finding those moments of connection. That's why I talk so much about my dad teaching me to play the drums, because it was a moment of connection where he could give something and knew how to connect. I have those absolutely fundamental memories of him taking me to movies, and we did not go all the time. So it was really, really special. Remember Wrath of Khan in particular, because he hadn't been planning on it. And then like we went outside to play with the other kids, and we're like, the other kids can't play today because their parents are all taking them to Wrath of Khan. And my dad was like, all right, let's go.
Let's go.
Let's go then. But then I was talking to him recently, and he hadn't told me in a long time his memory of seeing Star Wars. Of like, for him, it's like, yeah, no, I like Star Trek and I like Western. So like, I kind of got it or whatever, but it was the big thing and everybody's talking about it. And you already love those toys. And I was like, I don't know, you're young. He's going to flop around. He's like, I held you on my lap and you didn't move. You were hypnotized by that screen. And here you are all these years later and you're still talking about it. Wow.
Oh, we're talking about it. Yeah.
Oh yeah, we're talking about it. Yeah, sometimes I think he kind of gets it, and sometimes he kind of doesn't. Because like I had a nice call with him. He's like, "Did you see that Ewan McGregor guy? He's doing another Star Wars." Like, yeah, he definitely is. Final thing for me. So I really appreciate Adam bringing those thoughts and memories, because it really resonates with me. And oh man, I my dad is a huge Western fan, and I can't wait to sit down and watch The Mandalorian with him. I am so looking forward to when the time is right that can happen. Yeah. And I'm so glad that that Adam had that moment and shared it with us. So thank you very, very much.
Yeah, Adam, great stuff. Love hearing it. And I want to be clear too, like, you know, we celebrate all the entry points in Star Wars and all generations, and Star Wars can, you know, be there for so many people and represent so many people. We are definitely in this era. There's something that resonates probably with you and I, Joseph, too, of just coming up in an era where Star Wars was, for worse, marketed as boys' toys, and mm-hmm. that's what boys do, and especially at the time, perhaps even more just that's what the little white boys do and everything, and that's just some harsh realities of that time. So what happened is a lot of us, like the Adams, like you, like me, like our fathers who were raised by, you know, old men from a different generation, who Master Obi-Wan, or Master Qui-Gon, sir, what are feelings? What, how can I, you know, it reminds me the value of George Lucas really saying in the height of Rambo, fun series, but muscles and guns and this and look, I hit the gym too, not as good as Adam, but I get it. It's all there. It's all value. But for George to stand up during that time, and I'm going to teach you this this fantasy, it's about choices. It all leads to hopefully empathy for others. That's what saves the day. Holy crap. It was really valuable. And I'm glad to hear. I love reading stories and hearing stories from folks like Adam and even you and I when we open up to that side of it. Star Wars is for everyone. And we want to keep celebrating that. And we want more representation. We want more people at the table. But because it was marketed at a time, the Sears catalog says it was for us. And that was not right. That was wrong. But a lot of us, I think, picked up valuable lessons that we needed to hear. And I think that's one of the things George really wanted to do. And I'm getting emotional thinking about it.
Yeah.
But I really think he nailed it. I really think he did.
No, I think so, too. I think it is what makes it so all of Star Wars storytelling so powerful, and that this is the core of how to handle the difficult things in life, how to find joy, how to find connection. You know, I want to sit down and watch The Mandalorian with my dad because he's going to think it's cool.
When Din
cuts another bounty hunter in half with a door because he's the lone man and all that stuff drew my dad to Westerns. But then when my dad watches that show of this tough, lonely man who chooses to be here for this child who needs somebody.
Right.
He's going to get a tear in his eye too, because that's what it's all about.
And I'm marking down. I think this is Ken breaks down in tears three times on Force Center. I'm an emotional guy too, and I love it. And Adam and I, we don't talk often, but we've DM'd a couple times, and we share a lot of similar interests and backgrounds, and being in tough wrestling locker rooms where you are sometimes physically challenged just to prove that you belong there, which isn't always the most healthy environment to be able to connect with these space fantasies is so good. Adam, we're thinking about you and your father and your family.
Yeah. So very, very great power of the light side. Thank you very much, Adam. And we will shout out again the Canadian Cancer Society. With that, Ken, where can people find us?
We are the Force Center podcast feed. Sometimes we get silly. Sometimes we get deep and analytical. Other times we just get emotional because that's the part of Star Wars we connect with maybe even more powerfully than the other stuff. And you can find us on Twitter at Force Center Pod. We're on Instagram and YouTube as well. We have a lot of cool stuff going up on the YouTube channel more and more. And live shows, a big live Q&A coming at the end of July. Get ready for that. Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. We are available on Acast, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, and more. Merch available on tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter. And we are on patreon.com/ForceCenter if you want to support us there. You can follow me at Ken Napsok or go to my website, kennapsok.com. If you're listening to this before San Diego Comic-Con, I'm not necessarily going to be at the con this year, but on July 21st, I'll be at the American Comedy Company doing a big show with Mark Ellis and friends. So you can go to my website for ticket information if you're going to be out there. Joseph, you've got some cool stuff coming up too.
Yeah, that is right. I am going to be at the Convergence Convention in my hometown of Minneapolis in August. Friday night of that convention, I'm doing a new show called Joseph Scrimshaw versus Emotions. Some things we've been talking about.
I lost that round.
Yeah. No. I think it's a comedy title. It's a comedy title. It should be. We should both win, both me and Emotions. We'll see. I haven't finished writing the show. We'll see. Come see if I finish writing the show by August. That's part of the hook. You can find out information about that on my website, josephscrimshaw.com. And you can follow me on all the different social media, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok is at Joseph Scrimshaw. And that is it for myself, for Ken, for empathy. The most important part of Star Wars, empathy. This has been Force Center.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us.
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.